So welcome everybody to Parsha class, Toldos 5769. There's somebody here that hasn't been here for a while, and so I'm going to just give a brief review of how we're learning this year. For the last 2 years, we have been studying from the Mesilas Yesharim, the Path of the Just. This is the encyclopedia of Jewish concepts regarding ourselves. It's not a philosophy book. It's a book on Jewish growth. It has all the concepts from the Torah, and it's in order. It gives us a pathway, how to go from studying Torah to the highest levels of piety and service to God. And this year, we are learning the Mesilas Yesharim in order. Now, we're not studying the text of the book page by page as a group, but we are basing our Parsha insights and comments on a particular virtue that we are in the midst of. So, the way it works is that for 40 days, we are focusing on a virtue. Today happens to be day number 9 of the third virtue. So we started this before Rosh Hashanah. The first 40 days we focused on the virtue of Torah. When I say virtue, it's not a great translation. It's a mida. It's a quality. It's a trait. It's something to acquire. So for 40 days we were studying and focusing on how to acquire Torah. The Path of the Just is based on a statement that if you acquire Torah, it will bring you to the threshold of the next mida, the next trait. And that trait is Zehirus. And Zehirus is translated as vigilance or watchfulness. I'm going to illustrate very soon with a little anecdote from Perry about the term Zehirus. So our second mida was Zehirus, and we spent 40 days on that. And the third, the Path of the Just says that acquiring Zehirus will bring one to the next trait, threshold of Zerizus. Zerizus is alacrity or zeal. Those are the best translations that we have. Okay, now, as a review of what the concepts of Zehirus and Zerizus are, Perry Brickman told me today that he was recently talking to an Israeli, an Afghan Israeli, who speaks to his children only in Hebrew. He lives in his country, but he speaks only in Hebrew. And Perry was with him, and there are younger children, and there were some breakable items near where they were staying. And the father calls out to the child, Zehirut, which is the Israeli pronunciation of Zehirus. Zehirut. So, you know, perked Perry's ears. And he says, Zehirut, that's like Zehirus. And what was the context? The father was trying to say, be careful, don't break the delicate items. And that's what Zehirus is. Zehirus is, be careful, don't violate the mitzvahs. Don't violate the commandments. Right? It's the skill, we'll call it, of learning how to think and be careful, and not just run wildly, like we have in nature to do. We'll come back to talk about that a little bit more. So that's Zehirus. What's the trait after Zehirus? Zerizus. So Perry said he had another encounter with an Israeli, and since he had been thinking about a different Israeli, since he had been thinking about the use of these terms from our Sefer in modern day Hebrew, he asked this other Israeli, do you ever use the term in modern Hebrew Zerizut or Zerizus? So he said, yes. He says, when you're in the army and you're training, the sergeant will say to the soldiers, Zerizut.
Attention.
No, hurry up. They're supposed to be, let's say they're doing a run or something.
Double time.
Or an exercise. Zrizut. Like, don't just schlep along there. Get moving. So Perry was fascinated that both the terms Zrizut and Zihirut and Zrizut are used in modern Hebrew. And that's what Zrizut is. Our current Midah is learning how to galvanize ourselves to go and do what the obligations require, rather than being lethargic. You know, getting yourself up and going, out of bed, going to shul, you know? So that is the that is where we're at. We're in Zrizus now. This is day number 9 of 40. What I'd like to talk about today, with the help of our Parsha and some beautiful striking insights from some of the Bali Musar, some of the Musar teachers that we know and love, is to talk about the question, what Zrizus is and what Zrizus isn't. Okay, I think we're going to walk out of this room with a clarification of what real Zrizus is, in case we didn't know. And in doing so, we are also going to have to come out with a better understanding of Zihirus as well. And an appreciation for Torah as well. So this is how it goes. First, let's start off with our springboard from the Parsha. And this is a little, maybe a little part of the Parsha that you've heard before. Some people consider it to be cute, but it really is quite profound. So in the beginning of the Parsha, Yitzchak and Rivka, who are the second patriarch and matriarch, not having been blessed with children for 20 years of marriage, are praying to God for a child. And God answers the prayer, and Rivka becomes pregnant. And the Torah says in verse 22 to chapter 25, Ayisrotzitzu habanim bekirba vatomer im kein lomaze onochi vatelech lidrosh es Hashem. The children agitated within her. Children. Oh, she's having twins. And she said, if so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of Hashem. Now, the word Vayis rotzitzu, and they agitated. You look at the word, the Hebrew root seems to be of three letters, a resh, a tzadi, and a tzadi, ratzatz. And Rashi has different interpretations of what that root means. But we're going to look at one particular interpretation. And that is that ratzatz derives from the word ritza or ratz, which means run. The children, the sons, were running within her. Not so much room in there. Where are they running? So says Rashi.
Circles.
They're running around in circles, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Says Rashi. Raboseinu darshuhu lashon ritza. This is actually not a simple interpretation. This is a midrashic or homiletic, if you will, interpretation of the word, made by our sages, by the rabbis of the oral law. Whenever Rivka would walk by the study halls of Torah, there were some yeshivas in those days. That is the descendants of Noah that were righteous. There was his son Shem, and Shem's son Aver. They taught Torah just like individuals before them, and whenever she would walk by the study hall where they were teaching Torah, and of course Torah is a different way than we think of it. It's not formalized. They don't have the five books of Moses yet,
but they do have
Torah. They have some code, some ethical code, and all kinds of spiritual teachings from God. The Torah, after all, wasn't invented at Sinai. It was merely handed to Moshe at Sinai. The Torah was around from the beginning of creation. So there were individuals that possessed the knowledge of Torah, and they passed it on. They had lunch and learns, they had classes, they had men's classes, women's classes, they had everything. So whenever she would walk by that academy, Yaakov rotz umefarkes latzeis, the little baby Yaakov would be moving and running like, let me out of here, I want to go over there. Overes al pischei avodah zarah, when she would pass by the entrances where there was idol worship, because there was plenty of that too. Esav mefarkes latzeis, Esav was moving, let me out of here, I want to go there. And that's what she felt inside of her. She said, Imkein lama ze anochi, what do I want this for? So I heard once that why was she so agitated? You know, even if she's dismayed that she has a son that wants to go to the idol worship, but she's got another son who wants to go to the Torah. So one explanation I heard was that she didn't know it was twins. She thought she had one baby who was mixed up, who couldn't make up his mind. And she said, oi, that's worst of all, to have somebody who vacillates between Torah and Avodah Zarah. Oy vey, you can't deal with such a person. Then she went to inquire, and she was told, you have two inside of your womb. She says, ah, that's better. At least I know who I'm dealing with. You know, I've got the Yaakov and the Esav. Okay, that's better. But whatever the case may be, we're interested in this phenomenon of running inside the womb. And, you know, it's hard to imagine. These are unborn children. They don't have a mind. They don't have an ability to have values and to have choices. And it's interesting how the Torah uses the word running. So let's leave our story for a little bit, and let's take off on the word running. Let's be off and running. What does Rabbi Luzzatto feel about running? Is running a good thing, or is running a bad thing? I think
running to something, or
running away. It could be a child runs away from school. That could be a bad thing. It seems to me that we have a very, very big contradiction on how Mesilas Yesharim relates to running. The same word, ruts. And I'll take you back first to Zahirus. When we learned about vigilance, just explaining the concept, he says that the problem I mentioned before, that we have a nature to just run wild, and we need to be reined in to stop and think before we act, think before we run. Yirmiyahu bemoaned the evils of his generation, among whom this affliction was like a plague. This is on page 14, the beginning of chapter 2, explaining what the virtue of Zahirus is. The people in the times of Yirmiyahu, right before the destruction of the temple, they paid no heed to their actions. They failed to consider whether they should embrace them or flee from them. Yirmiyahu said in reference to these people, no man feels remorse for his wickedness, saying, what have I done? As one person, they rush to stay their course, like a horse charging headlong into battle. The word charging headlong is ruts. All they do is run. In other words, they were constantly propelled forward by their impulsiveness of their habits and ways without leaving themselves time to critically examine their conduct. As a result, they fell into wrongdoing without being aware of it. If you ask Rabbi Luzzatto on this page, is it good to run? He would say, no, absolutely not. Running is an evil. Running means you just charge ahead without thinking. Running isn't good. What we need to do, what Zahiris teaches us, is that you need to stop running. You need to sit down quietly. You need to make a cheshbon ha-nefesh. You need to calculate and see what's the right thing to do and what's the wrong thing to do. All right. So from the vantage point of Zahiris, it would seem that running is not a good virtue. You know how I can picture, like, my grandmother with her, you know, sweet, bubby face, may she rest in peace, in her Yiddish, you know, her accent. Why are you running so fast? Where are you going? Why are you running? Stop, slow down, slow down. All right. And then we get to Zrizus. And what does Zrizus tell us? We're so lethargic. We can't get ourselves going, right? We can't get ourselves moving. Why don't we be like the righteous people? Like Rivka. Last week we read about Rivka. What is Rivka doing? She's going to greet Eliezer at the well and offer him water. And what is she doing? She's running.
She's running to get water for the
cup. Batamaher. She runs to get him water, and she runs back and forth to get water for the camels, and then she runs home to tell her father that we have a guest. And the whole thing is Rizus, is about running. He quotes, let's see, in pages 37, 38, notice how human nature is characterized by lethargy, since the physical element of dust is coarse. To be able to serve the Creator, a mad person must overcome his own nature, and he must do it with alacrity. If he allows his lethargy to dominate him, he will surely not succeed. This is what the Tanna said in Pirkei Avos: be bold as a leopard, light as an eagle, fleet as a deer, ruts katsvi, running like a deer. Using that same word, ruts.
What about things to do when you're 3 years old?
First, you got to learn how to walk before you can run. And then he quotes in chapter 7 about Rivka, and he says, "Vatamahir ha'isha vatarutz vatageli isha." She ran quickly, told her husband. Well, that was actually a different woman. That's the mother of Samson. So, from the vantage point of Zrizus, you got to run. But we're confused. Is running a good thing, or is running a bad thing? That's my question. Anybody want to comment on this? On this paradox of running?
If you overrun, you're going to get caught up in your umbilical cord.
Rabbi Phillips, anything to say?
No.
Are you running for office? Okay, so here we have to go further into the insight for today. Rav Yerucham Lavavitz, who we studied with several years ago, based on his commentary of this verse about the children running, he says that, you know, to the comment we made about how can unborn babies even have a tendency? How can they have a value system or a choice? He says that what we have to know is that we have a nature. There are certain instincts, and there are physical instincts, like the instinct of survival. You know, instinctively, people are hungry; they want to eat food. There's also spiritual instincts, and there are instincts for holiness, and there are instincts for unholiness. And they exist within the human soul, different degrees and different people. Yaakov happened to be born and predisposed to an instinct of holiness. Esav was born within a predisposition to the instinct of unholiness. And this is what was causing their running inside. It wasn't a matter of choice or of value. It's a matter of instinct. And you might ask the question, well, that sounds like unfair. How is a person who is predisposed more for impurity ever going to succeed in life? It's unfair. God created him with a handicap. Well, the answer is because...
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
Why did you think I was looking at you for any particular reason? The answer is that each person's duty in this world is to work with what he has and to come closer to God at whatever level. You cannot judge a person by the bottom line, how much output, how much, you know, how many mitzvahs did he do? How much Torah did he study? You know, how good is his Hebrew? That's not the measure of man. God measures man based on his effort into improving himself. And everybody, even Esav, could have improved himself. We see that there was a thought that maybe Yaakov's daughter Dinah would have married him and maybe allowed him to improve. He never would have been Yaakov, but he could have been a more righteous Esav, and that would have been success. Tremendous.
In fact, they say that Yaakov was punished for failing to offer Dinah.
That's right. That's right. Because you see that even Esav could improve if given the right company. Okay. So, but the point is that we really do have an instinct within us, as you see from these boys. You know, as we say, it's an instinct of kedusha, of holiness, an instinct of tumah. But those are instincts. So here's where Rav Volba comes in, the Musar / psychologist rabbi of the most recent. I say that with the greatest endearment. He just passed away several years ago, and he was the Musar expert, and he was Rav Shlomo Volba from Israel, originally from Switzerland or Sweden, I can't remember, Switzerland I think. So he studied psychology also in his youth, but he was a student of Rav Yerucham. That was his mentor. So Rav Yerucham says the following. I mean, Rav Volba says the following. He says, let's say you have an instinct for Kedusha, an instinct for holiness. He says, this is very beneficial. This helps a lot in the service of God. If we didn't have it, and everyone in this room has it for sure because you're here, but if we didn't have this instinct that helped us along, that gave us a little bit of a predisposition to holiness, it would be much, much harder to serve God. The task would be much harder. So it's good, we should be thankful that we have this instinctive nature of being holy. But all it is an instinct. And instincts, he says, are egoistic and anochiit, which means self-centered. There is a term, you may have heard this term in the contemporary Jewish world. The term is frum. You ever heard the word frum?
All the time.
What does frum mean?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
Good. Rabbi Volba teaches what it means. Frum means you have an instinct for religiosity. Instinct. He calls the noun is frum kait, like Yiddish kait, menschlich kait, frum kait. He says frum kait is a natural impulse, an instinct to connect with the Creator. Is it a good thing? It's a good thing that can be used if you use it right. But that's all it is. It is an instinct which is egocentric and self-centered. A person who is governed by frumkeit will feel himself pushed to be as religious as he can, to adopt stringencies, But really what's driving him is to do whatever is best for him. It's a self-serving, self-centered impulse, just like all instincts are. It doesn't really help in the following areas. It doesn't help a person be a better friend or neighbor. It doesn't help nurture bein adam lechaveiro, between man and his fellow man. It doesn't even help nurture service bein adam lamakom, between man and God, lishma, for the sake of God. What it does is, it's like an impulse to self-preserve and enable a person to survive and even to excel and even to, it's almost like in a competitive sense, like the instinct to make a lot of money, or an instinct to become successful, to become famous. These are instincts. While it can be used, it can help a person, make a person's approach to mitzvahs a little easier, because he has kind of like that jet propelling system within him, it's not the basis of a complete and a perfected service of God. For that, one has to develop da'as. Da'as is knowing, knowledge, understanding, things that you have to learn. You don't have to learn frumkeit. Frumkeit is an instinct, but you have to learn das. The goal of a Jew, the job of a Jew, even if so, let's sum it all up. If a person is naturally endowed with an instinct for impurity, which some people are, and then it's clear that his job is to try to overcome that by exercising zehiras. In other words, he has an instinct to go run and party. He's a party animal. He wants, like Esav, he wants to run to the Avodah Zarah. So he's got to pull himself in, set himself down, zehiras. Right? Don't run so much. It's clear what he has to do. He has to practice zehiras. But what about the person who is predisposed with an instinct of kedusha, of holiness? Does he just go and feed on that for the rest of his life? No, that would be a mistake as well. Because remember, it's only a personal instinct. And let's say a person, it's easy for the person to get up and run to do certain mitzvahs. Run to his frumkeit. That's not zrizus. That's not zrizus. That's instinctive frumkeit. What Rabbi Volva is teaching is that everybody has to stop. Everybody has to stop running. Everybody has to stop running instinctively. Zerizus is not when a person is an instinctive drive and get up and go. That's not a zeriz. Zerizus has to follow zehirus, which is what Rabbi Lutzato is teaching us. You start off with Torah. Torah is the only source of knowledge and understanding. Nobody who is born into the world is born with Torah. We are born with instincts, but we're not born with Torah. We are empty of Torah. We actually have a predisposition for Torah knowledge because we were taught the Torah when we were inside our mother's womb. But then we forgot it all. So das we don't have. A person doesn't become a bar das, even a possessor of knowledge, until they reach the age of majority. So everyone has to start off by filling up on das that comes from Torah. By learning Torah, one will discover that they are governed, that even though they now are starting to learn, but they have these strong instincts which have been inside of them since their prenatal state. And they become aware of those instincts. And some of those instincts are good, and some of those instincts are not good. But Torah teaches you have to try to not act out of instinct, whichever one they are. So the next step is Zehirus. Sit down and think and apply your knowledge and decide what are the right things to do, not based on what my instinct says to do. What are the right things to do based on the Torah? What are the positive values and what are the not positive values? Everyone has to go through that process. We start off by slowing down. Stop running. After we learn how to have Zehirus, which means we now use our minds first, we put our minds before our instincts, and we come up with a list. Well, these are the things I need to not do. These are the things I need to do. I came to that through Das. Now it's time to employ Zehirus. After you've slowed down and you've decided what are the proper things to do, now you need the skill of Zerizas to do them. And then you have to start training yourself to run. But not instinctive running. Rivka didn't run on instinctive running. Rabbi Lutzato is saying that she is Zerizas running, which is running to do that which your Das tells you you have to do. Not that which your instinct tells you you have to do. Okay. I don't know how good a job I did at conveying this. But what this is telling you, practically speaking, let's bring it to a practical conclusion, that a person who has not been raised with an instinct of religiosity is going to really internalize, I think, what I'm saying, and is going to say that makes a lot of sense. The real challenge is to people that are from, that are so used to observing instinctively. And what Rabbi Volba is teaching us is that that's not, it's not a bad thing, but it is bad if that's where we stay. And a servant of God has to transition into serving Him with Das. And that requires stopping and even questioning. And even some of the things that we do all the time, out of habit, from habit, we have to stop and say, why am I doing it? Is it something that really I should be doing? Is it a priority? Is it self-centered? Or am I really learning how to be sensitive to others? Am I learning how to give? Am I learning how to do a mitzvah not because it makes me feel good, but because this is what God has commanded us? And if a person starts to think that way, they're going to find a whole bunch of things that maybe they're not doing, or maybe they're doing without proper intent. And that's what has to precede Zerizus. Zerizus is only fueling that which one has come to the conclusion through Das that he must do. To put this all in a different light, or in the same light, to put it in another way, Rabbi Pesach Krohn was here once, and he's a great speaker, and he speaks a lot, and he gave me a tape of a class that he once gave on Zerizus, and I listened to it, and one thing that stuck out is that he said, where is the playing field for Zerizus? Is it out on the pavement? How fast you run? Is that where Zerizus is performed? He says the primary place for Zerizus is in the planning stages. That's where you can tell if a person has Zerizus. They sit down, they decide, this is something that we need to do. And then they say, if this is what we need to do, one of the pitfalls we're trying to overcome is lethargy, Rabbi Lutato says, getting it started requires strength of Zrizus, and seeing the mitzvah or the project to completion requires Zrizus. So how is a person going to be a Zariz in those areas? Not by getting out on the pavement and running. If he really is a Zariz, he'll sit down, he'll take out a piece of paper, he'll write down his goals, and he'll make himself a timetable, and he'll figure out, this is when I'm going to start, these are all the things I need to start, and this is how I'm going to finish, and these are all the resources I need to finish. In other words, you accomplish. Zrizus is not about running. Zrizus is about employing das energetically with a resolve to make sure that it gets done. That's done up here. Zrizus is in das and implementing it with speed and with alacrity. But it's not just about running.
But Hashem really tells us this, I think, in multiple places in the Torah, does he not? When he says, I can think of a few different cases where the Jewish people, were guilty of some rather egregious sins, and God said, listen, I'm not impressed by your sacrifices and by your offerings. Don't think that that's what this is about.
Very good. Excellent. Excellent. That generation was characterized, and that was the generation of Yirmiyahu. And God said, you're serving me out of frumkeit. You are instinctive. You're still bringing the sacrifices, and you probably fancy yourselves as having zrizus, because you probably do it at the crack of dawn. You probably are setting records in terms of how fast it gets from the time of the slaughter to the time of the incense, and you probably fancy that as Rizus. And Yirmiyahu says, that's not Rizus. It's instinct. You're not even thinking about God. Mm. Exactly. And that is the pitfall, that is the occupational hazard of being an observant Jew. Because the fact that we have an instinct for Kedusha is a good thing, but it could also be our downfall.
What do you mean by the word? An instinct suggests to me genetics.
Yeah.
And so you're saying that
Yaakov had a genetic to study Torah.
People who are from birth are from not just by the accident of birth, but because genetically they have this special instinct, this gene for this instinct. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, in fact, some people that are not from birth also have it. They just didn't study, so they didn't know how to channel it in the direction of the Torah. People who, maybe you could say that people who become observant later in life, they also have that instinct to connect with the Creator.
So it either is genetic or it's not genetic.
It is. It is. The instinct is.
The instinct is.
There are people that are just more, you know, spiritually predisposed. Other people are more just like Yaakov and Esav. Some people run, you know, their instinct takes them to parties. Some people, their instinct takes them to the food pantry, you know, to volunteer.
But could you argue?
What about the Pintel Yid?
And every Yid, I mean, the truth is that we should all be thankful that we are descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And so we should have that spark of instinct for the Kedusha side. But it's still present in people in different degrees.
This makes me nervous whenever we get into these discussions.
But you know what? It doesn't, either way, a person should not be riding on his instinct. It has to come ultimately to Das. And that everyone can share.
I mean, okay. You're saying that it's not even enough to be Jewish to have this instinct, that to be from is like a subset of being Jewish. Just because you're Jewish doesn't mean that you have that instinct.
But
you have to be very observant to have that instinct.
Mm. I'm afraid this is complicated.
Everyone here, you know, in our generation, isn't it true that essentially everyone, if you went back a few generations, then our great-great-great-great-grandparents, or however, you know, less than that, were, you know, very
observant. That's true. That's a good
point.
That's good news.
So
that's good news. We all had observant ancestors. That's good news.
I never met my father and mother.
Obviously. I didn't say the last generation. Maybe it's a few generations before.
I think essentially all of them.
Right.
Maybe it's important to remember Funkite is a journey. It's not a destination.
Mm-hmm.
If it becomes a destination, that means you stop and you're there.
Right.
And
that's the
danger.
Absolutely. And a person could only think that if they were not engaged in study and in pursuit of knowledge. If you studied Torah, you would realize you can't possibly be there.
But this, the effect of this, I think, has, if I can use the word, troubling implications.
Yes.
I think. And I think of Jerusalem, where unless you're really from enough, you can be from, you could be a rabbi, but if you married somebody, for instance, who was not from, and you have, and God forbid, that, let's say it's an interracial marriage, two Orthodox people, but one is Caucasian, the other one is, let's say, Oriental. In the eyes of the Haredi community, for instance, I happen to know this, you are going to be excluded from certain activities, from certain schools, for instance, for your children, that kind of thing. And I think it goes to the essence of what you're talking about, which is that there are different classifications of from. There's from, and then there's real from, let's say. So it makes me nervous, I have to be honest with you.
It makes me nervous when I hear you generalize like that.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's
to talk about the whole already.
Well, but it's true, though, dear.
Right.
Is this the Oriental person a convert?
Yes. Well, she was adopted.
Okay.
And became.
So that means she wasn't born a Jew.
She was not born a Jew.
All right. So that's, you know, that's a question about. I agree with Dina. I don't think you can generalize. You know, my niece married a Mexican adopted young man.
Okay.
Who's the son of a brilliant rabbi. And he's not, I don't, you know, people will be people, and you may have people having personal prejudices or biases in their heart of hearts, but I, you know, has been accepted to all the yeshivas, and, you know, they had a wonderful wedding, and everybody was dancing.
And it may be peculiar
so,
to Jerusalem.
It could be that the standards,
there.
It could be the standards are different there, for whatever reason. But we're not really, I don't think that in the scope of our learning it is wise to try to tackle, issues of society, because number one, we can never get our hands around it, and on number two, it really diverts us from our ultimate purpose, which is to grow ourselves as people, as Jews. And that is the study of Mesilas Yesharim for sure, and of Musar in general. You know, there are two kinds of people. You know, one kind of people just worries about what's going on with the rest of the world, whereas for himself, oh, that's not important. You know, I'm perfect. I just have to worry about the rest of the world. And that's a person that's not engaged in the process of spiritual.
I mean, I feel sort of by definition excluded from this because I wasn't born with that instinct, and I'm not as observant by any means as I should be, a from person would be.
Right. Now, yeah.
So
I think Steve and I were talking about this earlier. And I think we're all at different levels of growth. You are, as the rabbi says, you are here, which means you want to learn more, you want to grow. I'm assuming that that's why you're here.
Yeah. No, but
it
I mean,
doesn't
it's
mean that you have
issue.
To jump in and say, okay,
no, no.
I'm from, I do everything
no.
I'm supposed
no, I'm
to
not
do.
The
whole point
I'm talking about the question of you either have the predisposition or you don't.
And the whole point of our class is to say that's not what's important. That's the whole point of our class, and I hope you got that. Was that the point of the class?
I'm not sure it came across as clearly
okay.
as you would hope.
All right. Okay. Did you get that point?
I got that point.
The whole point is that we have instincts.
Okay.
But that's not what the service of Hashem is about.
So why is it even relevant?
It's relevant because you have to know what Zrizus is and what Zrizus isn't.
Okay.
The reason why I make this point is because some people think that Zrizus is just being very frum.
Okay.
Because I always run, and I always run to shul, and I always run to the Beis Medrash to study, and I always run. But where did you get that from? Is that Zrizus, or is that your instinct mm-hmm. pushing you?
Yeah.
That's what Rabbi Volba is saying.
That's what you're supposed to do. That's what you've been told to do. That's what you grew up doing. Or have you taken the time to stop and think, why am I running to shul? And you think about it, and you get something from that experience and say, yeah, that's why I want to run to shul.
And if you start thinking, which is the process of Zahirus, you are going to find out what you need to do is not just be instinctive and self-centered about your Judaism. You will start to develop the quality of caring, of looking outside and looking at others. You will start to become... care about Bein Adam L'Chavero, between man and fellow man, and not just doing for yourself. And you will start to serve God more purely, with more pure intents, because you're serving God out of das,
right.
not
that's
out
that
of
helps.
Instinct.
That helps.
Okay, and therefore that's so we say that you have to first, before you can do Zrizus is not just about running. You have to first do Zahirus, which is about stopping to run.
Right.
Sit down, use your mind, use your das, divorce yourself from your instinct, and then learn to serve God with das. Once you realize that with your das, that you need to be serving Hashem, you're going to need to employ Zrizus, which is a special energy which you can find within yourself, which will help you do all those things that you have to do, because they're it's demanding.
So a person without being from birth, without being born with that instinct,
has an easier
person,
time.
Is that person capable of right similar or maybe even greater righteousness than a person who is from birth and observant every day?
In certain ways, greater. He doesn't have the handicap of serving Hashem out of instinct, because he doesn't have that instinct. What does that mean? He now has the opportunity to serve Hashem with das.
Okay.
With knowledge and understanding. So in a certain way, he's in a better position. Now, Rav Volba says, you know, it's good to have an instinct that will help push you in the way that you need to go anyway. Right? I mean, it helps if you have the habit to do a mitzvah.
But not having it is not a detriment.
Not having it means you might have to work harder to develop new habits.
Okay.
But at least you don't have to. You don't have to unlearn. You have to learn other things. Unlearn other things. Everybody has habits, right? So if you grew up not from, you might have to undo habits. Let's say that are not, proper in
but
Torah.
The goal ultimately is not observance as an end in itself, it's righteousness. Mm-hmm. I mean, the more observant we are, it doesn't follow from that that we're necessarily better Jews or more holy in the eyes of God.
Well, I would say...
Or are we?
I would say it's not just about doing actions and counting how many did you do and how many did I do.
Right.
The goal is to be an Eved Hashem, a servant of God. We serve Hashem with our entire being. It's not just a numbers game. How many mitzvahs did you do? Are you using your mind? Are you studying from the source? Are you training yourself to possess these qualities.
Okay.
And at you, at your own pace, for who you are. And that's all that matters. And that's how God judges you. You, as you are, with your background, with your qualities, with your instincts, how are you, and it's primarily the effort and the focus and the intent and growing.
In a way, it's not really fair of God, if I can be so irreverent.
You can argue with God, sure.
Why should he, I mean, how we're born is not something that we're in control of. He's in control of that.
Okay.
Certain people he favors with being born to the right parents, and other people he doesn't.
You have to get rid of the word right.
Yeah.
Well, right in the sense of from parents who are
who
from...
Who said that's right.
I had trouble with your explanation of from as being an instinct, but I felt much more comfortable when you're using the word habit.
Because it's even deeper than habit.
I was born with the instinct that I wasn't born into a family.
Okay. All right.
That observed
Fine.
All these things, but it's what I yearned for
okay.
as long as I could remember.
Fine. So instinct is not a measure for how righteous a person is. Instinct is just a fact.
You picked the wrong crowd to lecture to.
All right. I think it's actually, I think that it's not so clear. And maybe it's partially because I just had this discovery yesterday and today. And maybe I need to think it through better in presenting it. And it does, and I think it also hits different people differently. Like if I'm talking to an FFB, from birth crowd, then they're going to say, whoa, you mean we're not mm-hmm. supposed to be serving God with our instincts. That's why I said, this, what I'm saying now is really going to frighten the from birth person more than the Baal Teshuva.
I still think the word habit fits in there. Much
well, that's part of it. That's part of it. The instinct breeds habits. Not only does it breed habits, also habits are formed by the way a person was taught. Right?
They were taught, but they might have been inside.
Right. That's right. You may have had an instinct to connect with God, but you were taught otherwise. And but all of this says it doesn't really matter ultimately. What matters is the process of learning, translating into deeds with das.
Yeah, we all have mm-hmm. the spark. I mean, I think Kabbalah teaches that.
Yeah,
that we all
yeah,
have
that's
the same
true.
Spark
that's true.
Jews, we all have two souls: a Jewish soul and non-Jewish soul. So I think how you're, if you're lucky enough on some level to be born from. I think you're lucky. I think God probably holds you to a higher standard than he holds the rest of us because of that.
But, that's true.
You know, I don't think it's a detriment for the rest of us mere mortals who don't have that going for us.
And if you inferred from anything that I said today, then I did not make myself clear. Because I wasn't coming to say that.
I understand what you were saying.
I wasn't trying to say that, and I didn't intend to say that, and I still don't intend to say that. What I'm trying to do is explain what Zrizus is and what Zrizus is not. Zrizus is a learned quality that comes after you study Torah using your knowledge, your mind, and it has to come after you also employ Zahirus. Because you have to first stop running before you can start running again with Jesus.
Mm.
And that which seems to push us, even if it's pushing us in the direction of from, if it's instinctive, rather than through this process of knowledge turning into action, then it's not Jesus.
Yeah.
And then it actually has to be unlearned, or at least transitioned into thoughtful action. And that's all I came to say. So wherever you are, you may have inferred that I wasn't favoring anybody, in fact, but it hits you differently. Depending on where you are, depending on your background, and it'll apply, because we are at different points in the universe. But what unites us all, and what our duty is, all of us, is to go through the process of Torah, Zehiris, and Zerizus.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.